You're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Patrick Hester and Tracy Townsend.
Welcome back, friends. Please make sure your pod seats and tray tables are in their upright and locked position. The airlock has been sealed and docking clamps have been released for an on-time departure to the Functional Nerdverse. So, here we go. We've talked like so many times before about authors who like we're particularly excited to talk about and have like particular connections to, like in terms of us reading their work and being excited by it. Example, Patrick, for you? Like
of an author that I'm always excited about? Like yeah. I'm excited about most authors. They work really hard. They spend years of their lives to have an overnight success.
I'm asking you to play favorites like a bad dad.
There's too many to choose from. I have seriously enjoyed several dozen of our guests. There's like been lots of times when I have specifically asked you to book someone because of
that is true. That is very true. You do come at me with the wish list sometimes. So if I had known before I just happened upon it through the socials that Naomi Kritzer had a book coming out this year, then I would have pounced on it so much sooner. But as soon as I did see it, of course I did pounce. And thank goodness Naomi's a good sport because she's here with us today. So Naomi, welcome aboard and congratulations on Obstetrics.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
So probably worth it to like pedal backwards here for a moment and let the audience in on like what is Obstetrics, particularly since when this episode drops, it's still going to be like a week or two from its big
pre-order
release date.
Pre-order's
good.
Yeah, so it is near future about an obstetrician who is kidnapped by a cult because they need somebody to deliver their babies, and specifically to deliver the baby of a woman who is currently pregnant, who they know is going to have complications. So Liz, having been kidnapped, has to survive and has to try to convince them that she's cowed and cooperative while she watches for an opportunity to escape. She has to try to figure out, she goes through lots of possible ways to escape. Or get a message out. That's what the book's about.
Yeah. So,
I'm just gonna throw this out there, Tracy.
Yeah.
I think I've mentioned this before. Cults fascinate me.
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand. Like, I have watched a lot of documentaries about the cults. I watched the, it was on Netflix. It was like Be Sweet and Pray or something like that. It's about the FLDS.
Yeah.
And then now they've done a follow-up one because it's like they find out that the leader's like a cult leader and he's a pedophile. He's doing all this stuff. They finally arrest him. They put him in jail. And the fallout in the community is like, oh, this is like, what are we going to do now? How are we going to survive? And then another guy comes along and does the same shit to that. And it's like, But I don't understand. Like, so cults just I don't know. They it's a trip.
Yeah. No, I've been interested in cults. They're a really long standing interest. Mm-hmm. And I majored in religion in college. Like that was my college major. And I got to take a class my senior year called New Religious Movements in America. You don't say, if you're a religion scholar, you don't ever say cult.
Right.
You talk about new religious movements, or in some cases, like there's some other phrase like that basically says, like, it's a very scholarly way of saying these people are weird. You talk about like the degree of tension they have with society around them, et cetera.
Interesting.
Anyway, that class was fascinating because the professor got in people from different groups to come in as guest speakers.
Yeah.
So there was one week we had two guys who were members of the Unification Church, just to say they were Moonies.
Yep.
And they came in and talked to us. And then word got around apparently in the town my college was in about this class. And like a week or two later, we had a guy who was a resident of the town who was a former member of the Moonies, who had called the professor and said, I heard you're doing this class. I heard you had these speakers. I want to come in and speak to your students too. And so the professor was like, sure. And afterwards, one of the students was like, why did we have an ex-member of the Moonies and nobody else? And the professor was like, because that's the one guy who called me up and said, I would totally bring in an ex-member of, you know, the Mormons or the, you know, all these other groups. Some of the groups he brought in were not, I mean, they were just new. They weren't like, I mean, I think of a cult, you know, my definition of working definition of cults is like, they're not just new. They're also like, you know, taking steps to isolate you in various ways. They're controlling. Yeah. So some of the groups that came in were not controlling, were not isolating, because like, but anyway, it was a really, really interesting class.
Yeah. You know, I probably, because you're looking at it from the outside, but I always go, when they do the interviews, like the post interviews, and people are like, yeah, I just didn't realize I was in a cult. And you're like, so when the guy came to you and said, welcome to the religion, by the way, I need to brand you.
Yeah. Or sell all your possessions. Yeah.
You didn't go, well, that's strange. Maybe I shouldn't be here anymore.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing that always gets me. And I know that it's more complicated than that. I understand that it's more complicated than that. But still at the same point, it's like,
Oh, one of the women in the creative writing class I took in college joined a cult for a while after she was in college and then got out and she joined a secular cult. She was, it was a group that did what's called large group awareness training. They weren't
the meditation thing.
No, drugs? Not meditation. It's kind of like, I want to say Landmark Forum or something like that, but wasn't that, it was a spin-off copycat group. Anyway, she wrote a article about it called Cult Awareness. Her name is Kirsten Markham. You can still find it on the internet, but it was a really interesting article in terms of like sort of outlining how she got in and then the moment of like, sort of like, oh my God, I'm in a cult. And then how she got out. It was really interesting reading. It is a really interesting, like how people get in and don't, it is sort of like the, you know, the metaphorical frog in the slowly boiling pot a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And there's other cults you look at where you're like, wow, like, you know, you were like, hi, would you like to join our cult? We're going to start by branding you, and people still get into it. So, you know. People are weird.
but you know, we're going to brand you, but your life is going to be so much better afterwards. And they're like, huh, well, my life sucks. I guess I'll do it. You're like,
Yeah.
They seem like they're betting on a certain, there's a desire to recruit people with a certain kind of anxiety and vulnerability and to lean into that. And one of the things that so often as part of our conversations here is a variation on where does the inspiration for this type of book come from? But I think that A, the world in which we live right now makes the near future extrapolation that you are imagining feel, you know, less like it needs a lot of sort of imaginative prodding on one hand. There's a kind of urgency to it, and also your own, you know, interest in and familiarity with cults. So I guess the variation on the question kind of starts with a lot of the conversation that surrounded obstetrics that I've seen from reading early reviews and reading a sample of it myself and so on is comparisons to Margaret Atwood. And I think on the one hand, those are very flattering. Everybody would love to be compared to Margaret Atwood in a positive light. That'd be cool. But I think that there's also some really sharp and distinct differences that you are actively trying to cultivate in this story, you know, that are not, they're not meant to be a revisitation of what Handmaid's Tale is. And I would love to hear you talk about that kind of those goals that you were setting for yourself, those questions that were motivating you.
Yeah. I've read Handmaid's Tale and The Testaments, and they're amazing books. And I haven't watched the TV series because I don't watch a lot of stuff and it would stress me out too much.
Fair.
Just as visual series. obstetrics, it's in miniature, right? It's not, she's not living inside a country that's been taken over. She's living inside this tiny compound where she's a prisoner, but like there's an outside world. The outside world is still there. And if she can get there, like she can actually escape in a meaningful way. It's a much, in a sense, it's an easier fight. Like the Gilead is, you know, the whole country as far as we know. And like to get out is, you know, requires like a journey. You need a lot of help. You need a lot of support. Bringing it down requires like a full scale war, like a huge, huge struggle. Whereas bringing down something like this compound requires, you know, an FBI raid. It's a much, it's a much more surmountable. And I mean,
it's a more intimate and claustrophobic kind of danger.
It is. It's a more intimate and claustrophobic. Yeah, very much.
And FBI raids on cult compounds go so well.
They do. They go really well. I've never seen one go wrong.
I have a friend who is also a writer and has published in the middle grade space before, who lives in Waco, Texas.
I was just going to say, a friend of mine moved to Waco, and I was like, really? You're going to Waco?
And it's interesting. The it's not like it's a major feature of my conversations with her. Like, let's talk about the Branch Davidians again. But it's a interesting phenomenon from the way she describes it to me of how much those events both do and don't live in Waco as it is right now. It's more the curiosity of people beyond Waco that kind of keeps that conversation alive. I think the city itself has found its own way, for better or worse, to memory hole it.
It's one of those horrible things, because like I you know, when people find out I live in Denver, you know, a lot of people still go to Columbine.
Wow. I mean, okay, so Waco is a relatively small city. Like, I had never heard of Waco prior to what happened
there. Right.
And admittedly, like, I mean, this was when the raid on the Branch Davidians happened, I think, when I was a teenager, or like
I was early, in middle school at the time.
College, yeah. Maybe it went, I don't remember exactly when it was.
Yeah. It would have been Janet Reno. So that was 90s. Right. 90s.
Okay. I was in college when that happened. So, you know, it wasn't like I wasn't from Texas. So it wasn't like my knowledge. Well, I lived there, but like when I was a toddler. So it wasn't like my knowledge of Texas was super intimate or anything. But like Denver, I've heard of Denver. I have like a lot of associations with Denver that go like well beyond like horrible single incidents that happened there.
Yeah.
Whereas like, you know, when you get a small city that has something really, really awful happen, you know, that tends to live in people's memories as their association with the town.
Yeah. Well, and I often say Denver just because I don't want to say that I live in Aurora, because a lot of times when I do say Aurora, then that brings up the Dark Knight thing, the movie theater thing, which is gone. Like, there's always something, right? There's something that somebody remembers. Because I was big on Twitter at the time when the Dark Knight thing happened. And I still remember I went to bed. I was exhausted. Something had happened at work or something. And so I went to bed early and I fell asleep. And my phone started blowing up. And so I muted it and just like turned over. And it kept blowing up. And it's one of those things where even though when your phone's on silent, like you are aware that something is going on. And so about 4 o'clock in the morning or something, I kind of roll over and I'm like, what the hell? And I had just a ton of texts from John DiNardo at SF Signal. And he's like the one that was on top was like, you need to get online and tell people you're okay right now.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, what the hell happened? And like that's kind of how I found out what had happened, because people didn't like, I just went to bed. They didn't know if I was at the movie theater, because they know I'm a Batman fan. Like live in Aurora, you know, and so people were just freaking out.
Now, there was back in 2005, I think it was 2005, in Minneapolis, there was a bridge collapse.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
The 35W bridge collapsed at rush hour. A bunch of people died. It was pretty awful. Mm-hmm. That evening that that happened, this was prior to smartphones. I did have a cell phone, but like I didn't, you know, the ringer was quiet and it was like stuck in my purse. We were out. My family was eating dinner out to celebrate my grandmother's birthday. So we were in a restaurant having a nice time and didn't find out anything had happened until I got home. And as soon as I got home and I saw my husband had gotten answering machine messages and then turned on the TV to see what had happened. And I came home, we'd driven separately, and I came home and I saw that the TV was on and I saw just a quick glimpse of the screen. And I was like, oh no, something really awful must have happened here. And I literally went upstairs to post to like my live journal.
Oh yeah, LJ.
To say that I was fine because I knew that if it had happened in Minneapolis, people would be worried. Yeah. And in fact, there was a thread on a bulletin board I was on at the time. This is a parenting support board that I'd been on for a couple of years. I had a lot of good online friends. And there was this giant thread where people had been trying to get a hold of me and increasingly freaking out because they couldn't reach me. And by the time I logged in to say like, hey, I'm fine, going to go read the thread now. I think people were like mentally composing my obituary in their heads. They were so worried. And what was funny is it was a bridge that I would have, you know, I drive over that bridge maybe 3-4 times a year. It's not a route I take very often. So it was, you know, those who knew where I lived would have known that I wasn't super likely that I would have been on there. But anyway, it's a thing.
Yeah, and it's funny because the Aurora Theater that happened at, I never had gone there before. Like, it's – Aurora is pretty big. Uh-huh. And, you know, that was kind of – hold on. I'm doing directional math. Northwest, mm-hmm. really far from me. I want to say like a 15 to 20-minute drive. Maybe a little bit of that is interstate to get there. Mm-hmm. Versus there's like a movie theater that's like 5 minutes from my house that I would always go to. Yeah. Those were crazy times. Those were crazy. You know, to get back to cults for a second.
as one does.
As one does. I don't know if you've seen this or not. There's a TikTok trend. Like, you know, the TikTok challenges that happens. Now I don't have TikTok.
Me either.
This is big enough that it's made the news. Mm. There's a challenge of running through Scientology buildings and filming yourself.
I saw an article about that. It's called Speed Running Scientology.
Yeah.
I have seen, some of those videos have made it over to Blue Sky.
Yeah.
So I've seen some of those. Yeah.
See, I hadn't actually clicked through and read any of those articles. And so here's what I thought it meant, which was why I was like, holy shit, that's a choice. So for those of you who aren't familiar, Scientology and its belief in like thetans and so on and like a sort of like a measurement of the status of your soul, and there are more complicated things in there too. They do a process of programming and conditioning that they call being read, if I remember the term correctly, or like getting a reading. That may be the wrong term. So way back when I was in college, there was some guy who was on my debate team who during the summer ended up dating a girl who was a Scientologist. And the parents were quite adamant that the relationship couldn't go forward unless he
auditing.
An auditing. Yes, that's thank what you. It is. Yeah. Unless he went through an auditing process, which is basically they hook you up to something which is very similar to a polygraph.
Yeah.
And they put you through a bunch of different questions and stuff. And based on that, they tell you about your thetans and give you a ranking, and your goal is to reach a certain rank and et cetera, et cetera. It is an enormously expensive enterprise.
Yeah.
And so to date myself a little bit here, I had this conversation with this guy in like the year 2000. And at the time, the family to pay for his audits, I think he went through three phases of audits. It was $30,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And apparently, like, you're only supposed to do so many in a month or whatever, and so on. And so when I saw that, I thought that what they were talking about for speed running it was like somebody just like auditing themselves like really super fast in the system and like paying a shit ton of money to be like, and now I have ascended.
Yeah,
like, no. The same way some people are like using AI to finish their graduate degrees in 2 months.
No, this is kids with their cell phones. Literally running through
like a video game character,
and that's exactly what it is. That was the inspiration for this. This is like a speed run in a video game.
Like I'm in Grand Theft Auto,
and so they are going in and they're running through, trying to get through and get into the secret parts of the building, and like go around and take pictures and video and everything of them doing this, and then running out. Yeah. Like that is the thing. Yeah. And it has the Scientology people upset. Now, here's what's funny. Yeah. Like, Scientology is a recognized religion. It is. However, to your point, like they have to spend a lot of money. And I guess they reprint L. Ron Hubbard's books all the time. And then every time they reprint them, you're supposed to buy the new book and replace the old book with the new book.
As one does.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
I still remember my cousin had 4 kids, and she solved the problem by divorcing the guy. But
that's one way.
She had one son and 3 daughters. And she was worried because, you know, they would do a lot of things and the boy felt left out. Like he didn't, there was things that he was interested in that he could never do because the sisters weren't interested in them. So often she would ask me, you know, would I take him to an arcade or would I take him to baseball or would I do this or do that, like, and help him out. And at one point they were going to see a movie, and I want to say it was one of the dance movies, like, you know, Step Up or something like that, or whatever they were called. He desperately did not want to see that movie. Like he did not want to go to that movie. And so she's like, will you take him to this science fiction movie that's out? I'm like, sure. And so we go and see Battlefield Earth.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, and it was a terrible movie. And he's sitting there and he's looking at me. I want to say he's all
he's
of
like, – I was rather be at the dancing.
Yeah, he's all of 9 years old and he's looking at me going, this is terrible. I said, yeah, I know. And it was over and we're kind of sitting there and he's like, I can't believe, like, that was just awful. I said, yeah. Do you want to pull a prank on your mom? And he's like, yes. And I said, okay. When we go out and she asks us how the movie was, we say the movie was great. And could we please go to a bookstore because we really want a copy of Dianetics? And he said, okay, what's that? I go, it doesn't matter. And we go out and, you know, and she's there with the girls and she's like, so how was the movie? And he just looked at her deadpan and goes, it was great. Can I have a copy of Dianetics? And her eyes got so big and she's like, what?
plus 10 pearl points. Well done.
I remember a review of Battlefield Earth that said something like, I want to tell everyone that this is the worst movie ever made, but that suggests that campy fun might be in store and I need to emphasize how much it isn't.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. I have not seen it. That I have heard that, nothing about it that made me want to see it.
That was the movie where John Travolta had come back and he was on top again. And he used every ounce of his coming back power to make that god-awful movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Which proves, again, with great power comes great responsibility. And sometimes it is used poorly.
Sometimes it is, yes. Oh, you know, Lord. I'm interested, like, when is obstetrics coming out? Like, it's like
June. Oh, it's coming out in June.
It is June. Okay.
Yeah.
So pre-orders are going to be necessary as people are listening to this.
Yeah.
Yep. It is June 9th. So, yeah.
Okay.
I think it almost goes without saying that obstetrics is going to offer a view of Liz's situation in the cult compound that can't be divorced from the present moment and political concerns and questions of like who gets to be treated as fully a person and who gets to have all their agency and so on.
Yeah.
But I think that because of that, it's important to turn our eye towards some work you do, which is utterly not speculative fictional. And I'm wondering if you would indulge us by talking about some of the work that you've done in kind of curating and gathering information about local political races and balloting in Minnesota. Sure. I know that you've been really, really active in that space.
Sure. So on my blog, I do during each election season, I write about each race. And with a focus on, it's strictly Minneapolis and St. Paul. I don't write about races that don't appear on ballots in Minneapolis or St. Paul. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of focus on down ticket races and races both very local and statewide, but people don't pay a lot of attention to them. So like in Minnesota, we have a statewide race for our state attorney general, our state auditor, and our state our secretary of state. These are all really important races that don't get a lot of news coverage. And then at the local level, I write about things like the Minneapolis park board election, the school board races. And back when I first started doing this, like, because I've been doing this since 2006 or something like that, I don't remember exactly, but a really long time ago is when I started doing this. Back when I started doing this, Minneapolis also elected its library board. Oh, wow. And had elections for soil and water commissioner. Soil and water commissioner has now gone to an appointment-based system where you like apply and there's like a state
review.
There's a committee that reviews the applications, mm-hmm. which makes a lot more sense, honestly, than elections for soil and water commissioner. And ditto, actually, library board is also done that way. The first time I ever did it, I had figured out that you could look up your ballot in Minnesota in advance, and you could just pull it up as a PDF and see exactly who was going to be, you know, what the races were and who was going to be running for what. Because every time I would go into vote, there'd be races where I was like, I don't know anything about any of these people. This is a nonpartisan race, so I can't just vote for the Democrats. And I don't know who any of these people are, and I don't actually know what this office even does. So who do I vote for? So I discovered I could look this up early, and so then I could, you know, Google all the people in the, you know, that were running and see if they had a website or if there was any other information about them that I could find. The first time I ever did this, I needed to take notes, and so I opened a window in my live journal and just took notes there.
Yeah.
And then once I was done, I posted it because I was like, maybe somebody else will find this useful. And it turns out they did. And so I kept doing it. And initially it was like, there were three other people that mm-hmm. were, you know, in my area and like reading my live journal. And then increasingly like people were passing around my, you know, the link as like a source to find information about these sort of the odd races, the races that were not not being covered in the paper that you wouldn't necessarily know were happening. And and now like, you know, literally thousands of people read it during election season. And I do endorsements mostly because I find that entertaining. I want people to pay attention to their local races. These races matter so much. Like, you know, people tend to focus on like the you know, the race for president and U.S.
really
senator.
High exposure. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I'm not saying those races don't matter, but on a day-to-day level, who your city council rep is going to matter so much. Who's running the schools in your city are going to matter. It matters so much. People really need to pay attention to this. And it can be really hard to find that information because like media, like newspapers are really struggling and local newspapers are in a whole lot of trouble almost everywhere. And so even just, you know, finding out what elections are happening in your town requires like time and research and resources that not everybody has. So
And I think even though your focus is, again, strictly on the Minneapolis area, what you're doing still has value for people beyond Minneapolis, because it's kind of providing a model for how someone who is not themselves in politics as a political actor in the sense of running for office can still engage in the process in a way that can hopefully help improve the process for others. Yeah. and help get that information. You can go to like Ballotopedia or something. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's robust information there, but once you drill down to the local level, there's usually very, very little. Or it's just information that the campaigns themselves have placed there that may or may not survive much in the way of scrutiny. I know that for my own local races in my area, my mother-in-law lives in the same town as my husbeast and I do. And when it's a local election, mother-in-law and husbeast just ask me, like, who should we vote for? Like, because they never know. And so I spend time, like, looking up the ballot in advance and doing a non-disseminated version for myself of what you're describing on a much, much smaller scale. And yeah, it's, I have often myself sort of wondered, like, is there a way to capture this and share it with other people? And I mean, obviously I have my own partisan biases and my own ideas, and those should always be taken with a grain of salt. But we're certainly living in an age where people knowing more and not less about who they're giving power to has become more important than ever.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what I tell people is that if you can find the list of people running, that's always pretty critical. Most places, I think, put it online now. So if you look, you can find who's going to be on your ballot. And then, like, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of searching the names, mm-hmm. and you'll find their websites. Sometimes you have to look on Facebook. I sometimes look on LinkedIn because that can give you some, like, really useful information in races where you're not finding a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, you don't necessarily have to set up a blog, but you can totally tell your friends, tell your family, your neighbors, just tell people. If you find information that makes you want to support one person over another person, by all means, share that information. That's not, people sort of worry that this is going to be pushy, but like, people are really hungry for information about local races a lot of the time. So, you know, if you know anything about a race, like, by all means, share it. Cause like, a lot of people just don't have any information at all. And they'd like it. And I mean, I try to make my biases are super clear on my blog. but like, I know there are, in fact, Republicans that read my blog because, I mean, they don't necessarily take my advice, but I round up a whole lot of information and give them what they need to make an informed choice, even if what they're going for is, like, you know, who's the most evil, fascist, oppressive person I could vote for. If you're voting in
Executor 66.
Yeah. If you're voting in Minneapolis, there aren't a lot of Republicans on the ballot. So you're not going to have your choices are going to be limited if you're a Republican living in the city of Minneapolis. But
true.
So on a slightly lighter note, I will throw out that, as Tracy knows, I used to travel quite a bit, and I have actually been to Minneapolis. One of the greatest moments of my life was a customer taking me to a restaurant where I got a baked sweet potato with cinnamon butter. And I owe that all to Minnesota. I didn't even know that existed until I went there. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't know you could eat it like this. This is so cool. And then I will also say, when you talk about evil, one of the worst things to ever come out of Minnesota is the Vikings.
You're just rage baiting over here.
Go Bears! Go Bears!
I don't watch a lot of football, but my husband cheers for the Patriots. So,
oh my God!
In terms of evil levels, I don't know that the Vikings are really.
Yeah, I think you make a point there. Yeah, I asked my husband once, like, think we're going to have a game of the Cowboys versus the Patriots. Who would you root for? And he's like, I would not root. And I'm like, no, the rule of the game is you have to root for someone. Who would you root for? Cowboys versus Patriots. And he was like, I'm going to go mow the lawn. So I never really got an answer on that.
In that game, I root for the commercials.
You root for Meteor.
There's a grumpy cat meme, which is, you know, furious little cat face. And I hope they both lose.
Yeah, somehow.
One of our patrons, Todd and I, during NFL season, there's a lot of that chatter that goes back and forth between us in messaging. It's like, did you see who's playing? That, yeah, I'm rooting for the Meteor. Yeah, me too. I just hope they kind of both lose. Like, it just goes back and forth. Yeah, it's kind of fun.
And with that in mind, as a form of fun, picks of the week?
Picks of the week.
Let's go.
We'll get to picks of the week. Just hold your horses. We'll get there. Before we do, I wanted to talk to you for just a second about $5. I know. You're shaking your head now. Look, they say that $5 doesn't go as far as it used to, and they're kind of right. Can you get a cup of coffee for $5 these days? Some of you are saying yes, like a black coffee, right? You could get a small black coffee probably for $5 somewhere, but you're not going to be able to get one of the fancy ones with the stuff in it. Shot of this, shot of that. Those are going to cost you a lot more. So that $5 is not going to get you that. But you know what? There's a place where you can get a ton of value for just $5 a month, and that is patreon.com/functionalnerds. Let me break it down for you. $5 a month, and you gain access to things like our super secret Facebook group, which has been going on forever, our brand new and popular so far, I'm enjoying it, a lot of other people are enjoying it, but our brand new Discord server, which is also super secret. Can't get there from anywhere else. You have to be a patron of the Functional Nerds to get there. You get a monthly video hangout. And those are really cool. That's me and Tracy host. And the patrons, like you, if you become one, get to hang out with us. And we all chat and we talk about the things that are going on in the world and have a little bit of a nerdy conversation. We talk about books sometimes and movies and other things. So you get that for $5. And on top of all of that, one of our most popular things that listeners absolutely love, you get the Patreon exclusive episode of the pod that we call Just Us. That is just me and Tracy talking about stuff. And by the way, if you joined today, you would get all the back episodes of that, I believe, which is kind of cool. And that's all for $5 a month. I mean, come on, what are you waiting for? Head over to patreon.com/functionalnerds and help us keep the lights on and keep this thing we call the Functional Nerds Podcast rolling on. While you do that, you don't have to like pull your earbuds out or stop listening. We're just going to jump right into the other thing that listeners really, really love. It's called Picks of the Week.
All right. So, Patrick, what's up?
My pick is Molly Tanzer's Fault. So, Molly had picked Frieren. I started watching Frieren. I really liked Frieren. I finished all the episodes that were available of Frieren on Netflix, thinking that I had finished the series and then finding out there's actually more that I just can't see unless you have Crunchyroll. But one of the things that Netflix did is it's like, hey, if you like this, you should try this, right? It's the whole thing. Yeah. And so I started watching The Apothecary Diaries. I don't know if you've ever heard of this or not. It's actually based on some books, I guess. Okay. But this is a sort of kind of Chinese empire, but not really, because they don't want to get China upset with them. Mm. This is a girl who grew up with her father, who's an apothecary and a doctor. And she grew up in just outside the Pleasure District near the capital. And she learned all about medicines and stuff like that. And one day as she leaves to go run her errands, she is kidnapped and taken to the palace where these people say that they are, that she's part of their family, and they're selling her because they want money. And so they sell her to the palace as a worker. And the way it works is because they're selling her, all of the money that she earns goes to them. And she feels like because she's a commoner, there's nothing she can do about it. So she starts kind of working in the palace. But she's super smart and she knows all this knowledge about herbs and medicines and stuff. And when stuff starts going wrong, she starts diagnosing things and fixing problems. And it kind of comes to the attention of the head eunuch who starts using her knowledge and her expertise to kind of solve problems and mysteries that happen at this palace. It's really interesting. I have enjoyed the hell out of it. And just like with Frieren, there's only so many episodes available on Netflix, and then you have to go to Crunchyroll to find the rest of them. And apparently there's going to be a whole new season coming up. But I'm really enjoying it. She kind of, it's kind of like a Sherlock Holmes, but with herbs and Chinese culture, but not really Chinese culture. And it's just fun. And I'm enjoying it quite a bit. So that's The Apothecary Diaries, and you can get a couple seasons on Netflix.
Nice. So, Naomi, what has been bringing you joy?
So can I list a couple of things?
Sure.
Sure.
Okay. So I will note that I watch things very, very slowly and always years behind everybody else. So with that noted, I have just watched the first season of Schmigadoon, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
years after literally everyone I know watched both seasons. In books, I just finished reading the forthcoming book, A Dubious Clamor by Marissa Lingen, and it was it's extremely fun. It's coming out in September, I think, and it is it's sort of a an alternate Victorian England with magic, and it involves it's like a, very much a no war but the class war kind of book with magic and harpies and a lot of interesting sort of like elements from mythology, and it's got great dialogue and it's very, very funny. It's just a lot of fun. And it's short. Yeah, people should definitely pre-order it. I don't actually know if you can yet, but once you can, you should pre-order it. And then, I'm also, just started reading the third book in Ariel Kaplan's Mirror Realm series. So that started with The Pomegranate Gate. This is also an alternate world fantasy. It's sort of an alternate 15th century Spain, and it's Jewish. It's very Jewish, with like a Jewish fairy realm, and which is where the Pomegranate Gate leads to. It's set during the expulsion of the Jews by the Inquisition, and it is like dark, high stakes, really good. The third book that just came out last month is called The Kingdom of Almonds. And I just started reading that. And I realized I need to go back. I wrote summaries of the first two books when I was done reading them, so that I'd be able to go back and read my own summaries before I read the third book. So I wouldn't have to.
Look at you. Because you did homework.
When I read the second book, I had to go back and reread the first book before I could read the second book so I could remember what was happening. So I wrote summaries. Right. I wrote summaries so that I'd be able to, you know, get into the third book a little faster. But if you've never read them before, you can pick up the first book and just read all three with no breaks and find out exactly what happens. And it's one of those series with like really immersive, rich, real feeling world building, which I really love. Yeah. So.
It's funny that you mentioned Schmigadoon, because my oldest friend in the universe sent me a reel from that, and he did not know what it was from. He didn't know what it was or anything. He's just like, what is this? Look at this. And I go, yeah, that's from the TV show. He's like, there's a TV show? So I sent him the trailer for Apple TV for Schmigadoon, and he's like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, we actually signed up for Apple TV because we wanted to watch Murderbot, which is like the first time in years I've watched something at the same time as everybody else.
I will throw it out there. If you're, I don't know your tastes, but Slow Horses on Apple TV, I really like, which is based on the books.
I haven't read the books.
And it's what's his name?
Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman, as this old fat spy who smokes too much and drinks too much, and he's in charge of the Slow Horses, which are all the spies that have screwed up and can't quite be fired and can't quite be killed, and so he kind of takes care of them and in his own way. It's I like that show a lot. I think there's another season coming up here soon. But yeah, that's a good show on Apple TV, and so is For All Mankind. It's been a good one. Nice. Tracy, do you happen to have a pick this week, or should we just move on?
I do have a pick. So I am my classical tendency to arrive at things well after everyone else. Fist bump, Naomi. I'm in that same camp with you. I started reading the Image comic series Invincible, Robert Kirkman and so on. I started reading it in part because my son's birthday is, at least for relative to time of recording here, imminent. And he had a birthday list of things he wanted. And what he wanted was volume 2 and 3 of the ongoing omnibus of Invincible, because he has volume 1. He's also been watching the show with his friends for a while now. And so I was like, well, okay. And so grab my iPad and used Hoopla to get the color version. Ha. I mean, you can have your black and white compendiums if you want, boy, but here we go. Start reading the first omnibus in color on my iPad. And it's been a really interesting experience. It's obviously an extremely genre aware series, unfortunately, because of the kind of like overexposure of the cartoon adaptation. I am already spoilered on many things that I know are coming in the not too distant future of the storyline. And so I'm reading it more for a sense of like, how is Kirkman slow burning us towards the things that are to come? And how is he, in, again, this super genre aware way for a superhero narrative, setting us up to arrive at a different kind of tension and critique with it? It's not Watchmen. It's not, you know, that sort of narrative to it, but it's not that either in its own way. It is a sort of lighthearted, fun seeming, sneaks up on you with some really gritty stuff kind of experience. And so I have been enjoying it. If you haven't checked out Invincible as an actual print media experience, you probably should.
Very cool.
All right. So Naomi, we had such a conversation here. I didn't even have a chance to get to the fact that I'm just sort of like fangirling over the fact that my students read you as homework, and now I get to talk to you. I'm going to be, their papers are due on May 4th, and so I'm going to be reading an awful lot about Cat Pictures Please in the next couple of days, because we had an option of about like 15 different short stories to write about, and a lot of them seem to want to talk about cat pictures. So we're going to be getting really close to each other in that respect.
My daughter is currently a senior in college, and she is working on a paper about The Story of Your Life by Ted Chiang. So like,
oh, you know, yeah, that's like, fun.
We just talked really yesterday fun. And I was like, man, that's really cool. I had, yeah. So.
All right. So where can people hook up with you, your super cool stuff, support what you're creating, all that good thing?
I have a website at naomikritzer.com. I am on Blue Sky as naomikritzer.social. Those are the main places to find me. You can pre-order Obstetrics anywhere at all, at the bookstore of your choice. If you'd like a signed copy, you can pre-order it from Dreamhaven Books or Uncle Hugo's in Minneapolis. Those are both places I'm going to be doing signings, and they can take orders for signed copies, and then when I come in, they'll give me a list and I can personalize it for you if you want.
There we go. So thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for inviting me. This was really fun.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode or any of our episodes, please, please consider sharing it with your friends on social media and give us a like or some stars on the platform or the podcatcher that you're listening to us on. Those likes help with the nasty little algorithm so new people can find us when searching for good stuff to listen to. If you'd like to keep up with the Functional Nerds on social media, the official podcast socials are as follows. At the-functional-nerds on Facebook. At functionalnerds_podcast on Instagram. Shut up. I couldn't get the same one. It just didn't work that way. So hush. And you know what? It's going to get worse here. And at thefunctionalnerds.bluesky, which is BSKY, .social. I know, I couldn't keep it copacetic. I tried, but hush. Tracy and I have our own accounts. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Blue Sky. You can find us by searching, if you want me, it's ATFMB, because that's just my handle everywhere I go. Or you can search for Tracy Townsend and find Tracy on social as well. Our Patreon helps keep the lights on, and new episodes like this one coming out week after week, which we've been pretty good at. I mean, we're very consistent, so you might consider checking us out over at patreon.com/functionalnerds just to support the pod and help us out there, you know? It does help. Thanks again for listening. And I have one question for you before I go. Is it baseball season yet?
Mr. Carpiers.
You got it right. How about that?
Yeah.
You can call me Cannoli Joe.
Hello, Cannoli Joe.
If you've never listened to the podcast, there's two different styles here. There's Tracy, who does prep work and comes up with some very thoughtful questions. And then, oh, squirrel.
Oh, for God's sake. Patrick Louise.
Hello, Patrick. It is I, Clayface.
Okay. That's probably a good enough signal.
When someone comes up to me and says, hey, I really love what you do, I'm like, I'm sorry. Do you know who I think you have me confused with someone else.
The whiz bang and the gosh wow and the sense of wonder stuff.
My favorite thing about time travel is I actually had a time travel joke for you guys, but you didn't like it.
I'm so excited.